The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back. It is Monday, July 12th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. My goodness, it's good to be back here in the chair at Rolla J Studios in beautiful Portland, Oregon, where it's not a typo, it's a way of life. We are having ourselves a great time. It's so good to be back here at the show. As a lot of you know, I just took my first two-week vacation in about 5 years. And I'm telling you, they forced me to do it. They literally had to hold my arm behind my back and push me away from the microphone. I love you people so much. I appreciate all the emails I got. Got a lot of chat, a lot of text from people that were just really missing the show. And like I like to say, marijuana is not addictive, but Normal Show Live is. And joining us here from our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and, of course, half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Welcome back, Radical West. So nice to have you back in that chair.
It's great to be back. I'm glad you're back. How was your two-week vacation while we were off the air?
It was nice. It felt like the entire summer, but I did get a lot done, and I got to see you for a few days. Russ came out here and spent some time on the coast, and that was a lot of fun, too.
And you tell them about how amped up I was not being around the computer and how I was just – it was awful.
I was actually worried about you. I thought, man, when you pull Normal Show Live away from Russ, for a little while, there's not much there. Poor guy, he was like a little shell. It took us a few days to get him to come out and play.
Yeah, it was tough. And unfortunately, I have to deliver bad news today, too. You noticed that Ganja John is not in the studio today. Ganja John is in the hospital right now. A lot of you know he's our engineer, and he has kidney failure, right? So he needs a kidney transplant. But also, he only has one good eye, right? He's been blind in one of his eyes there for... as long as I've known him, and much, much longer. He's having that eyeball removed. Apparently, there's some sort of problem with it, and he's having that removed. He's going to be getting a prosthetic eye, and apparently the person, there's an artist. There's artists that do this, and they make the eyes match and everything, and it's really amazing technology they have for these prosthetics. But he was also talking about possibly getting a cannabis leaf prosthetic, so he'd have a leaf as one eye and a regular eye.
We love our Ganja John.
Yeah, bless you, Ganja John. I hope you're listening from the hospital if you can, and if not, we'll play it on the podcast for you. So he'll be out for the next couple of days. That means I'm coming back from vacation and having to run the whole studio on my own, so if there's any mistakes, it's all my fault. Now, Cannabis Carrie joins us for our hemp headlines right after the first break. So, Carrie, what is in the news, well, today in the past 2 weeks?
Well, I was going to say probably today through Wednesday, all of our news segments are going to be titled, So What'd We Miss?
Yeah.
Today, we're going to start with a celebrity bust that we missed. And we're also going to talk about those pesky dispensary bills when it comes to states. And this time, it has nothing to do with California.
All right. A lot of news coming up. So Carrie will be right back with us after our first break. And that'll be coming up here right in just a second. Carrie also does our Roots Monday music, so she'll be bringing us a tune, actually all the way from Greece, 1946, cannabis tune for you. I always love Roots Monday. We get the obscure stuff coming up. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to go behind the headlines with Paul Armentano, Normal's deputy director. He's going to be telling us about the Rand Corporation survey that's getting a lot of play in California for the campaign on Prop 19. This is the survey that supposedly said that pot prices would plummet and everybody and their grandma would be smoking pot and it'd be a terrible thing. Paul Armentano is going to be here to tell us all about that. And also, Radical Rant at the end of the show, I'm going to give you a look at some recent statistics to come out regarding racism and the war on marijuana. The California NAACP has come out in support of Prop 19 specifically to end the racism against African Americans. The statistics are amazing. The history is abominable. We'll have that at the end of the show. You're listening to Normal Show Live. Be right back.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Radical Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal and host of Normal Show Live. Medical marijuana is legal in 14 states today, and I encourage you to visit MarijuanaDoctors.com to find a physician to help you obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in your state. In most medical marijuana states, patients qualify with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis, and other conditions which vary by state. Learn which conditions are covered in your state at MarijuanaDoctors.com. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, MarijuanaDoctors.com will help you find a physician online or by phone to obtain a permit for medical marijuana. MarijuanaDoctors.com is fully transparent and HIPAA compliant. Call 866-996-9333 today or visit MarijuanaDoctors.com. That's 866-996-9333 by phone or online at MarijuanaDoctors.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Paris Hilton was taken into custody on suspicion of marijuana possession by South African authorities while attending a World Cup soccer match. She was spotted with a group of friends that included friend and former Playboy model Jennifer Rivero and A-lister Leonardo DiCaprio. Security at the Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium reportedly witnessed some in the group smoking cannabis. Hilton was detained for 4 hours along with Rivero, who later pleaded guilty to the possession charge. Hilton was released with the charges against her withdrawn. The incidents took place during the game between Brazil and the Netherlands. Amsterdam's home team won, by the way, and went all the way to the final match where they lost to Spain.
Wow, Paris Hilton getting in trouble for smoking pot. Isn't that like number 18 or 19 on the most notorious things Paris Hilton ever got caught doing? I mean, come on. Paris Hilton smoking pot at the World Cup game. Not a big deal if you ask me. But I can understand why she had to smoke pot while at the World Cup game. It was so she could get the damn sound of those vuvuzelas out of her head. You know what I'm talking about? Those trumpets they were using at the World Cup. That damn noise that sounded like, you know, mosquitoes on steroids. What's up with that? Anyway, that's about all I had to say about World Cup stuff and Paris Hilton. But, yeah, I watched some of that. I watched some of the soccer. Did you watch any of it, Carrie, any of that World Cup stuff?
Just the highlight reels. I have to admit, it's hard for me to sit through an entire soccer game. I'm very American when it comes that way. I mean, I love soccer, but really just the highlights.
Yeah, me too. I'm pretty much in the same boat. But when I was really rooting for the Netherlands, right? You know, Netherlands coming down to the World Cup final, Netherlands versus Spain. And I just wanted the country that had the most liberal marijuana policies to win the World Cup, right? It's like, look, they have coffee shops, and yet they won the World Cup. I mean, come on. How could that have been any better? Of course, they lost to Spain in the 116th minute of running around kicking a ball and not scoring, as I like to call soccer. But anyway, I'm going to get all sorts of hate mail for this, I know. That's okay. Bring it on. I'm an American.
Okay. New Jersey lawmakers voted to delay the implementation of the New Jersey Compassionate Medical Marijuana Act, a medical marijuana bill that was signed into law in January and was supposed to go into effect last week. But one of the problems with the New Jersey medical marijuana program is that it requires patients to obtain marijuana from state-run dispensaries. with the new amendment to delay the measure, it is now set to become law in October of this year to allow time for the Department of Health to establish regulation for the licensed production and distribution of medical cannabis. Of course, October will be a beginning date. An actual functioning program is not expected to be up and running until sometime in 2011. The new time frame may give some politicians time to monkey with the legislation even further. Republican Governor Chris Christie has suggested that lawmakers might consider amending the law to limit the production of medical cannabis to a single supply source, and also to limit distribution to authorized hospitals.
Yeah, this is crap any way you slice it. Unmitigated execrable actions by the New Jersey Governor Chris Christie to delay this law. And we spoke with Ann Davis, the executive director of Normal New Jersey, before we went on hiatus for the vacation, and she made this very important point that this law is written, and specifically in the language, is written for people who have less than 12 months to live. That's one of the groups that's covered, right? People that are terminal, less than 12 months to live. So we passed this law for them in November of 2009, and it's not going to be until 2011 that they're going to actually be able to use it. Well, so much for those poor folks that, you know, have less than 12 months to live. I guess this law is no good for them. They're going to be dead before it ever gets enacted. And what is it they're waiting for? What is it they can't figure out? If they were the second state to pass medical marijuana, I could see this argument. If they were number two, this would make some sense. But they're not. They're the 14th state. There are 13 other states that you can go to, look at their laws, look at their regulations, look at their statistics, and figure out what works and what doesn't. It's just amazing to me to think that they would use that as an excuse, that, oh, we can't figure out how to work the program perfectly. Look at the other examples. Quit trying to reinvent the wheel. Look at the other states and come up with something that's going to work for the people of New Jersey. Of course, the whole reasoning behind this has nothing to do with the fact they can't figure out how to run the program. It has to do with they don't want to run the program. They want to stall. They want to delay. They want to have all the time they can to tack in additional amendments and onerous regulations that make what is already the most restrictive medical marijuana program in the country, to make it unusable. That's right. It's the most restrictive medical marijuana program in the country, folks. People aren't allowed to even grow their own medicine. And they're talking about now having it all at one location, maybe having it grown through Rutgers University or something like that. Again, we'll keep you on top of this, and we'll be speaking with Chris Goldstein, also works with Normal New Jersey, and had a lot of lobbying that he did personally with these legislators. We'll get him on later on the week, and we'll have him give you a breakdown of what's going on in the no garden state.
Well, New Jersey is most likely looking at Maine and Rhode Island for a lesson on how a state might implement a state-run dispensary. Both of the New England states have made progress in their efforts for the state to distribute medical marijuana. Maine health officials announced that three licensed nonprofit corporations will operate six of the eight approved state dispensaries among them. Northeast Patients Group, a recently formed corporation with ties in California, was selected from among 29 applications to run four of the eight dispensary licenses. Two of the eight were not awarded because the applications in those regions failed to meet the state dispensary standards. That included criteria based on the applicant's experience, record-keeping systems, security plans, patient education, and inventory control. The applications that were not chosen in Maine have until August 20th to rework their applications to vie for the two remaining licenses. The dispensaries should be up and serving patients in 2 to 4 months. Now, in Rhode Island, health officials there are sifting through applications after a public hearing on the issue of approving three dispensary licenses. The hearing was held last week and was attended by about 150 people, with about 20 people testifying for the dispensaries, with relatively no one speaking out against the state-run dispensary idea. Two people came to complain about the proposed site on one of the applications that were made mostly public, and one man came speaking out against the proposed pricing of state-sanctioned cannabis and warned that the state was giving away three gold mines that cater to the greedy, not the needy. The health department plans to select at least one and as many as all three dispensaries by August 1st, depending on the qualifications of the applicants. The decision will be based on how well the proposed Compassion Care Center operators complied with a range of requirements on their application. The state of Rhode Island will continue to license medical marijuana users and caregivers who grow marijuana for patients, and patients will be allowed to get their marijuana from the dispensaries as well as from the caregivers. See, it's not so hard, New Jersey.
Absolutely right, Carrie. Thanks for the news there. Yeah, we got Maine, we've got Rhode Island, New Mexico has state-run dispensary system, California's got dispensaries, Colorado's got them, Montana's kind of got them going on there, although they're getting firebombed. There's no need to have to study it any further, New Jersey. You have plenty of examples to pick and choose from if you're interested in figuring out how to come up with effective regulations. All right, we're going to take a moment here to show a video for those of you watching on the webcam. This was sent to me by one of our listeners. Pookie sent it to me and said that I'm in it. So I haven't seen it yet. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's called A Normal Life. And this is a trailer for the movie A Normal Life. So I think it'll be kind of interesting to take a look at. I have to adjust a few settings and buttons here to make that happen. So give me a moment and we'll run that video right now.
I think it's important to say that no medication is going to work for everybody all the time. And that's as true for marijuana as it is for Tylenol.
If marijuana was legal, I could grow it in my garden. And it's very inexpensive.
Reasons why there's a zeitgeist around not only medical marijuana, but the entire discussion around legalizing marijuana. And one of them, primarily, is the economics that we're living through today.
I think it's easier for men to come out and say they support it, because women have a lot more on the line. You know, if they're mothers, then they have their kids on the line.
We want to know. Normal.
The purpose was we wanted to be a lobby nationwide and in Washington for responsible marijuana smokers.
Part of what we're doing with Oregon Normal is trying to maximize the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act and try to help the patients that truly need the medicine.
You know, taking care of the person you love and watching them dying of wasting syndrome, there's nothing fun about that.
I have read enough on the subject of using marijuana for glaucoma that I'm convinced that it helps. It makes me really mad that I have to be a criminal to avoid getting blind.
And those who smoke marijuana, like myself, have been criminals since 1937.
The program in general is to have more women feel comfortable to come out publicly and say that they support marijuana law reform and that they are working to make that happen.
Opens consciousness, opens the doors of perception, expands consciousness, and puts you in a receptive state.
Like I said, in my view, I want to take care of sick people first.
The science is absolutely clear. The pharmaceuticalization of cannabis is just beyond the horizon.
Let's hope we can all live together in peace and harmony, love, and legalize marijuana, for God's sake. I mean, what's the problem?
All right, looks like the trailer for the movie A Normal Life. I'm Freddie Farrakh coming to you live from Normal Show Live. I don't know what's up with that caption there. I don't know who the hell Freddie Farrakh is, but we all know that's not me. I'll be sure to get in touch with those people and make sure they fix it before that comes out on videotape. That's A Normal Life. The trailer's available up on YouTube. I think someone will post the link in the chat room if someone's got that as well. I don't know who Freddie Farrakh is. I don't even know that name as an activist, so I'm not sure who they're referring to. I thought it might have been Freddie Mercury's original name, but I don't think that's true either. I'm sure you folks will get out on the Google and find out for me. All right, coming up here on the show, we have got the Roots Monday tune coming up for you from all the way from Greece, 1946. This is going to be some great music. And at the bottom of the hour, Paul Armentano joins us behind the headlines. He's going to talk about the Rand Corporation study that has been getting a lot of ink in the papers lately that supposedly says that pot prices would plummet. Try saying that three times fast. Pot prices would plummet if it were legalized in November, and then everybody would use it and the sky would fall. So all that coming up here at the bottom of the hour. And we certainly need a break, boy. I know, I've been gone for 2 weeks, and here I am already talking about taking a break. It's Normal Show Live. We're here every day, 1 o'clock Pacific. See you in a minute.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez.
Cannabinoids.
What a goof. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for that dope weed. Fire it up.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by PlanetFantastic.com and Bella Blue Tie-Dye Fashions. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. All right, welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour, and we bring Cannabis Carrie back from beautiful Astoria, Oregon, for our Roots Monday tune. Hi again, Carrie.
Hi, Russ. Well, I was just going to say, you don't get more roots than today's Toker Tune. We're traveling back 80 years and visiting the country of Greece for today's Toker-friendly tune. This wonderful world music is from the genre of rebetika, which is Greek folk music that took a similar path to that of American folk music. Rebetika was originally written in the early 20th century and then revitalized in the 1960s and 1970s. Now, the track is from an amazingly cool album called Cannabis Indica and Rebetika Songs, recordings from 1931 through 1946. Like other folk music genres, rebetika often covers topics that were important to the working class, who wrote and performed the music among groups of friends and peers. This collection includes 18 different songs from that long ago era, with titles like Smoking the Hubble Bubble for Hours, When I'm Smoking a Joint, The Nargile, which I found out is a word for a Turkish hookah, We were smoking one night, and today's tune, titled Ti Mosteros O Skopos, which is Greek for the point of getting high. Hmm. Now, I have to admit, I can't tell you exactly what the rest of the lyrics mean. It is literally Greek to me. But as a folk music fan, I enjoyed listening to this piece of history and just knowing it is from some of our not-so-far-off ancestors who also enjoyed relaxing after a day's work with a little cannabis makes it all the more compelling.
Oh, I love it. Thank you, Carrie. I love getting the foreign music and the older music especially because it does show how long we've had a cannabis community and how long people have been singing and talking about it, so we really appreciate it. This is The Point of Getting High. Fantastic music for Roots Monday. The Point of Getting High, authentic Greek music from 80 years ago. Wonderful find, Carrie. Thank you so much for bringing that to us. If you'd like to get your own download of this song and to learn more about the artists, go to our blog at stash.normal.org. We've got all the information and the MP3 download there for registered stashers.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
Yes, it's time to take a look at Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Today, Monday, July 12th, and all this week, Michigan Normal is calling out for people to join the statewide Adopt a Highway Pickup. You can join with your local Michigan Normal chapter. Just check out minormal.org/chapters.html, or as usual, pick up the link from our calendar at normal.org/calendar. Southwest Michigan Compassion Club is meeting at the American Legion Hall in Buchanan, Michigan, and there is a panel discussion with Representative Hagan in Ohio regarding House Bill 478, that is the medical marijuana proposed bill in Ohio. An Ohio Normal board member will be there on the panel as part of the discussion. And in the Upper Midwest, Madison Normal in Madison, Wisconsin will be meeting at the Wilmar Community Center tonight in Madison, Wisconsin. For more information, call 608-241-8922. Tomorrow, Tuesday, July 13th, there is a weekly medicating event taking place at the Phoenix Cafe in Hazel Park, Michigan, with music, medication, and art, $7 cover charge. And in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Hemp TV is on the cable access channel. You can call 505-880-0666 for tickets and information about the show. On Wednesday, July 14th, Cincinnati Fountain Square Reggae Night is taking place at 5th and Vine in Cincinnati, Ohio. Join with our Miami Valley Normal Ohio chapter there. You can get information at info@mvnormal.org. Grand Traverse Compassion Center Connection Meeting is happening in Traverse City, Michigan. You can check out gtcompassionconnection.org for information on that Wednesday meeting. And there's an executive committee meeting on the Dane County Board Medical Marijuana Referendum with Madison Normal. Check out madisonnormal.org for more information. And for all of the upcoming information, you can always check out our Normal Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar. Before we wrap up, a couple of personal notes, some events that I will be attending in the next couple of weeks. This Friday, I will be speaking at the Medical Marijuana Seminar, Seeing Through the Haze of Municipal, State, and Federal Law. This is a CLE presentation put on by the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers. And this is a presentation we'll be doing on legalization in Oregon. I'll be joined by Oregon Normal's Madeline Martinez for that. We'll be streaming that presentation live here at Normal Show Live, so stay tuned on Friday after the show. We'll head right down there to that state building, and you'll see the presentation live. Then the following weekend, next Saturday, July 24th, I will be appearing at Netroots Nation in Las Vegas, Nevada. This is the annual convention, the fifth annual convention of the progressive blogosphere. It was originally called Yearly Coz, named after the Daily Coz website, and features bloggers and activists from all over the left wing of America. Daily Coz, Huffington Post, Think Progress, Talking Points Memo, Fire Dog Lake, all the big-time bloggers will be there. I'll be there on a panel with Neil Franklin from Leap, Ryan Grimm from the Huffington Post, Stephen Gutwillig from the Drug Policy Alliance, and we're going to be talking about marijuana, politics, and policy. So check that out, and if I can get Wi-Fi access and permission, I'll stream that for you as well, and you can get your own front row seat at the Netroots Nation Convention in Las Vegas. I hope to be making a whole bunch of great contacts to help spread the word about ending adult marijuana prohibition.
Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.normal.org or call toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
For almost 40 years, Normal has been the place to go for the latest studies and news on marijuana science, policy, and activism. For over a decade, one man at Normal has written and reviewed more studies and news stories regarding marijuana than almost anyone on the planet. First as Senior Policy Analyst and now as Deputy Director, Normal's Paul Armentano has written for major newspapers, academic journals, and magazines on the subject of cannabis and is frequently requested as an expert witness in the courtroom. His knowledge and experience are an amazing asset to the cannabis community. Available to you now in a segment we call Behind the Headlines with Paul Armentano.
Welcome back, everyone. 34 after the hour, and we're joined by Normal's Deputy Director, Paul Armentano, from his home in the Bay Area of California. Paul, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be here, Russ.
All right. We've got so much to talk about. There's been a lot of changes and a lot of things happening while we've been gone on vacation. Most notably, the Tax Cannabis Initiative in California has now been given its number. It's Proposition 19. And I understand that you are helping out with the campaign there. Can you tell folks what your involvement is with Prop 19?
Sure. I am co-chair of a steering committee for the campaign, and it is a steering committee specifically that works with health professionals who are advocating for the passage of Prop 19, and I'm also an advisor to the general campaign.
Oh, excellent. Thank you for doing that. We appreciate it. And what's happening now that Prop 19, you know, has got its number is that we're starting to see a lot of the opponents come out against it. Some of the typical ones we'd expect from law enforcement and such, but also some non-typical opponents in the dispensary industries there in California. I've reported on a couple in Sacramento who are actually plowing money against the medical marijuana initiative. And most recently, we've seen a poll come out regarding the initiative where we got some depressing news that it was only a 44% for and a 48% against. What's happening there politically that has caused this this support to go down, and what are we doing about it to get the numbers back up?
Well, it's hard to say if anything specific has happened in the last few weeks politically. You know, when you're looking at different polls and different pollsters, it's fairly difficult to compare from poll to poll to poll. They're looking at different sample sizes. They're looking at a different makeup demographically of who's being polled. I can tell you that this latest poll, I was not surprised in some ways to see the areas where Prop 19 was lacking in support. It was no surprise, for instance, to learn that older voters more likely than not oppose this initiative. That's information we already knew going into this campaign. It wasn't surprising, for instance, to find out that Latino voters, a majority of them, also oppose this initiative. There again, that's information that we knew going into this campaign. What this poll certainly does, though, is it galvanizes to the proponents the demographics that really need to be specifically targeted, that need to have tailored messaging. And certainly the proponents of this campaign were aware of this, and they are making efforts to reach out to specific communities where we need to boost our support, including the Latino community, including the African-American community, and including women.
Okay, we'll look forward to getting those communities a little better reach out. And we have some other guests from the campaign, from the Prop 19 campaign, coming up in future shows, so we'll get into more depth on that later. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about, though, is a piece of work that's being cited by a lot of these opponents, and that is this study from the RAND Corporation, Rosalie Pakula's group working on that as well, and it, supposedly it was about the pot prices would plummet, it would go down to $38 an ounce, and everybody and their dog would be smoking it, and the world would come to an end. Can you characterize this study from the RAND Corporation and your feelings about it and how it affects the campaign?
Sure. And to be fair to the authors of the RAND study, the real take-home message that wasn't reported is that we really don't know what would happen. Mm-hmm. And the authors of the report really fell over backwards to say that all of these scenarios that they put out there were all suppositions. Mm-hmm. And it could be just as likely, for instance, that the passage of Prop 19 could yield much larger tax revenue than has been speculated, or it's just as likely that use rates wouldn't change at all. Now, of course, the mainstream media picked up on what one could argue is the most doomsday-like scenario out of the different scenarios that were proposed by RAND. And that was the scenario that under a legalization scheme, the price of marijuana would drop significantly, and with that price drop, you'd see a simultaneous increase in marijuana consumption, because Rand's hypothesis was that if the price of marijuana falls, then it's logical to think that more people would use marijuana. Now, I take issue, actually, with both of those suppositions. Clearly, under a legal regulated market, the price of marijuana would fall. Right now, the price of marijuana is elevated because the individuals that produce and distribute marijuana are taking on risk. They are taking on risk of arrest, risk of incarceration, and they're passing on that risk premium to the consumer, and that's why the black market prices of marijuana are very high. Obviously, were we to remove that risk premium from the production and distribution of marijuana, we would have a different market price for the product. Unfortunately, even if Proposition 19 was to pass in California, we could not entirely remove the risk premium from the production and distribution of this product. There would still be federal prohibition, of course, in existence, and there would most certainly be communities and local governments that at least initially would not implement their own legalization, taxing, and regulatory schemes. So even in parts of California, commercial cultivation and distribution would still be illegal under state law, and certainly all of these practices would be illegal under federal law. There's a reason why in California, despite 14 years of legal dispensing of medical marijuana, that the average price of medical marijuana is not much different now than it was prior to the passage of Proposition 215. And unfortunately, those realities would continue even after the passage of Proposition 19. So I contend that while you might see some slight decline in price, it wouldn't be anywhere near as dramatic as the estimates that the Rand Corporation was putting out. Conversely, I don't think you're going to see a significant increase in consumption. Perhaps it could be argued that people that are already using marijuana today in California, perhaps they may use more marijuana in the future were they to have easier access or were there to be some sort of decline in price. But of course, right now in California, anyone who wants to use marijuana can already do so. They don't have much difficulty accessing it. Price doesn't seem to have really ever have been an issue. So it's hard for me to believe that by simply lifting certain legal restrictions, you're going to take an entire population of people who right now express no interest in using marijuana, and they're suddenly going to want to start using marijuana. That example has not played out anywhere else in the country. I don't think it would start playing out in California. And also, just quickly going back to this price elasticity, while it may be true, looking at, for instance, alcohol, when you drop the price of alcohol, you see an increase in alcohol use. When those same evaluations have been done elsewhere regarding marijuana, we see that price very rarely influences people's decision to use marijuana. In fact, when people who used to use marijuana but no longer do so are surveyed on why they stopped using marijuana, and they're asked to rank 5 or 6 or 7 different criteria, a price generally comes in last. Price wasn't influencing their decision, but other factors like were they comfortable using the drug, do they like the effects of the drug, that's primarily what's moving people's decision to use marijuana or to keep using it or to stop using it altogether. But price plays very little role in people's decision whether or not to start using marijuana or to keep using marijuana.
Right. And you know, there's only so much that you can smoke anyway. I mean, if people are already spending $300 to $400 an ounce on it, being able to buy it for $30 or $40 or $50 or $100 an ounce, they can only smoke until they get high. I can't see that would cause much difference. I'm also wondering, Paul, you know, the gist of their argument here is that use would go up and that that is necessarily a bad thing. And I'm wondering if there's an argument to be made to say maybe it wouldn't be. If some of these people that are, you know, popping opioid painkillers or over-the-counter acetaminophen that lead to so many problems with the liver, if they're switching to marijuana for their everyday aches and pains, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe if the people who are drinking alcohol all the time switch to marijuana, maybe that's a good thing. But politically, I think that's a hard argument to make. What do you think?
I'm glad you brought that up. You know, when the Board of Equalization crunched their numbers about a year ago or so, they actually factored into this equation that there could be a substitution effect, that you could have individuals that right now are using alcohol and tobacco, and a percentage of those individuals may reduce their use of alcohol and tobacco in lieu of using cannabis. And while they did not give any moral weight to that decision, and it sort of just stood back and looked at it objectively and crunched the numbers, I think certainly we and many of your listeners would see that as a net gain for the health of the individual user and to society at large. I mean, when we're talking about use rates and we're talking about marijuana and we're talking about adult use of marijuana, you know, when it comes to brass tacks, we're talking about an adult using a substance in the privacy of his or her home that isn't going to cause a lethal overdose, that's uniquely non-toxic, and that doesn't change behavior in such a way that it increases aggressive or reckless decisions. So really, what's the problem here?
Well, depends on who you ask. I don't think Barbara Kay would agree with that, but that's a rant for another time, I believe. As we're rounding things out here, we are speaking with Paul Armentano, Normal's deputy director. And if you haven't been reading his writings on the Normal blog, I'm going to encourage you all to do so. There's a couple of pieces up there that I wanted you to touch on briefly that have to do with this notion, because we hear it all the time. These doctors will come out and they'll talk about medical marijuana and they'll say, "Well, you know, the jury's still out. We just don't know enough about it. We need to commission a study." And you've written a couple of pieces that address that. I thought maybe you could tell folks just how much studying has been done on marijuana and marijuana policy.
You know, that's a great question. There was a report in U.S. News and World Report about a week ago or so, and I was quoted in it, and there was Columbia University researcher, Margaret Haney, who was also quoted in it. And the gist of the article was, we have some anecdotal reports that marijuana is valuable as a medicine, but the scientists who investigate this issue say we just don't know enough. And Margaret Haney was quoted as saying something along the lines of, "I'm not pro-marijuana, I'm not anti-marijuana, I just want to understand marijuana, and right now, you know, we're not there." And I'd like to ask someone like Margaret Haney, at this point in time, in 2010, what don't we know about marijuana that you need to know? And how many more studies need to be conducted until you would have that information? Because if you go and you look at the scientific literature, you'll see that we have over 20,000 published papers in the scientific literature, be they case studies or clinical trials or preclinical trials or reviews, assessing the effects of marijuana. We know more about marijuana than arguably any other plant on Earth. And we certainly know far more about marijuana than most other substances we ingest. We clearly know more about marijuana than any prescription or over-the-counter drug we put in our bodies. We know how marijuana interacts with the human body. We know its effects. We know its mechanisms of action. What more do these people think we need to know until, at a minimum, we can at least say that marijuana is relatively safe enough to the human adult user that we should no longer arrest, prosecute, and incarcerate people who use this substance in the privacy of their own home? That's the question that I think they need to answer.
Yeah, what is so dangerous about it that it has to be illegal, but it's not so dangerous they don't ever lock anyone up for it? Those are one of the questions I always ask. Maybe they're still hung up on that whole whether or not an atom in your thumbnail is really an entire new universe question. Maybe that's the one they haven't gotten answered. I don't know. But Paul Armentano is Normal's deputy director, and I, again, encourage you to check out the writing on blog.normal.org, and you can get the links to those studies and the reports that Paul was just talking about. And Paul Armentano, thank you so much again for joining us here on Normal Show Live.
Thank you, Russ. Take care.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we've got a little bit of time for a radical rant. I'm going to give you a look at the racism that created the war on marijuana and the racist effects it's still having today. Thanks for joining us. Normal Show Live every weekday, 1 p.m. right here.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended the Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 50 after the hour, and we're going to take this time here to give you a little look at some history, some marijuana history that maybe some of you don't know, and maybe I'm not the most qualified guy to deliver, but it's the history of racism in the war on marijuana. It's something I decry a lot when I do these events. I go to these hemp fests, and I go to these conferences, and so often I'm looking out at a sea of white faces like mine, which is fine. I like white people, but, you know, when it comes down to it, the war on drugs is really a war against minorities, and a war to control minorities, and to some extent to control leftist thought and to control the youth. But in a large part, it has to do with controlling race and racism. And I want to give you some background on this. I thought of doing this rant because I watched a presentation in Aspen from Billy Murphy. He's an African-American criminal defense lawyer. And he was making the point of how drugs are legal if you're white to a large degree. And the case he made had to do with the Grateful Dead concerts. He was trying to explain to his son that there are these concerts where 20 to 30,000 folks show up, and literally in the parking lot, they're trucking in, you know, on the dollies, they're bringing in the big canisters, the big I don't know what they're called, canisters of nitrous oxide. They're selling acid, they're selling shrooms, they're selling weed. Everyone knows it's happening, and yet it is allowed to happen. And then the concert goes on, and, you know, 20, 30,000 people are tripping out of their minds watching the Grateful Dead. And he was trying to explain this to his son, and his son was like, really? A place where people are just doing drugs and the police aren't there breaking them up and locking them up? And yeah, it really happens. And so he really had trouble believing that. And it led me to want to talk about this and this notion of racism and how it is at the core of the laws against marijuana. So let me bring up some slides here. First of all, marijuana got banned in the early 1900s, and primarily because of Mexican immigrants. There was the Mexican Revolution, and after the Mexican Revolution, there was a flood of immigrants coming to America, and in 1909, El Paso became the first city to pass any laws against the Mexican problem, which was basically to outlaw marijuana. Couldn't lock them up for being brown, but you could lock them up for what they smoke. And then Prohibition had another thing to do with this, and that is because of when alcohol prohibition ended, there was a guy named Harry J. Anslinger, who was part of the cops, you know, enforcing prohibition. He needed a new job. He was put in charge of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, and the Mexican marijuana was his main focus. And then by 1937, all 48 states had already made pot illegal, right? A lot of us point back to the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act and say, that's when it was banned. No, it was already banned in most states long before 1937. It wasn't until then that the feds came around to it. And this campaign to ban marijuana was just completely full of lies. Some of the stuff that we read in there, this was a Canadian prohibitionist named Emily Murphy, who said, quote, while in this condition, high on pot, they become raving maniacs and are liable to kill and indulge in any form of violence to other persons using the most savage methods of cruelty with no responsibility. It's, you know, Newsweek magazine is saying that people are getting decapitated over marijuana. But where the racism kicks in is when we start looking at places like the New York Times. In 1933, the New York Times said, quote, marijuana is highly intoxicating and constitutes an ever-recurring problem where there are Mexicans or Spanish Americans of the lower classes, end quote. We find it in the Christian Century newspaper, 1938. In some districts inhabited by Latin Americans, Filipinos, Spaniards, and Negroes, half the violent crimes are attributed to the marijuana craze. Dr. Lee Rice of San Antonio reports that 80% of all the murders committed by Mexicans are done while the killers are drugged on marijuana. And the Hearst newspapers once said, quote, marijuana influences Negroes to look at white people in the eye, to step on white men's shadows, and to look at white women twice. Dun, dun, dun. It's just the amazing racism here. And I want to, let me skip ahead here, because it's not just the newspapers. We're also talking about Harry J. Anslinger himself, the first drug czar who shaped our federal drug policies from the FDR administration all the way to the JFK administration. He was in office for 25 years, and this is some of the stuff he believed. The primary reason to outlaw marijuana is its effect on the degenerate races. Marijuana is taken by musicians, and I'm not talking about good musicians, but I'm talking about the jazz type. And there are 100,000 total marijuana smokers in the U.S., and most are Negroes, Hispanics, Filipinos, and entertainers. Their satanic music, jazz, and swing result from marijuana use. This marijuana causes white women to seek sexual relations with Negroes, entertainers, and any others. So this is the foundation of our marijuana laws. We get into the 1970s, and from Haldeman's diaries with Richard Nixon's administration, found that Nixon had said that the key is to understand that the whole problem is the blacks. The key is to come up with a system that recognizes this without appearing to. And that's when Richard Nixon created the war on drugs and called drugs public enemy number one. The effect that that is having still resonates today. This is the latest story that happened while I was out on vacation. California did a survey, and this was the California ACLU and the California NAACP has taken a look at this, and they found that in every county in California, the arrest rates for African Americans for marijuana are much greater than they are for white folks. Anywhere from double to quadruple in LA County and San Diego County, quadruple the rate of arrest. 1 in 5 arrests in California for marijuana is a black person, while black people only make up 7% of the population. We find it in the prison statistics when we look at what happens after they get arrested, because sometimes they'll come out and say, oh, well, Russ, of course there's more black people arrested because the cops are more often in the black neighborhoods, therefore they're going to, you know, that they try to make that excuse. Okay, let's look at what happens after they get arrested. Post-arrest, African-Americans only make up 33% of the arrests, but are more likely 46% to be sentenced to time in the can. It's just, we have more black men between the ages of 20 and 29 under correctional supervision, that is prison, parole, or probation, than we have in college. And this continues because of the racist enforcement of our marijuana laws. Not just in California. We've seen this in New York City, where Latinos are 4 times as likely and African Americans are 7 times as likely to be arrested on a marijuana charge. If you're a white woman in Soho smoking a joint, you're going to be fine. But if you're a black guy on the stoop in Harlem, you're going to get busted and you're going to go to jail. We found it in Philadelphia, where Philly Normal commissioned a study that found in the city of Philadelphia, 85% of the arrests were for African Americans. That's right, 85% of all pot arrests, 17 out of 20, were African Americans being arrested. It is a tool that our law enforcement continues to use to get people into the system, to collect as many black and Latino names and fingerprints as they can. This is part of a systematic way of dealing with people in our cities, especially, that has always been biased against people of color. There's even a name for it. They talk about driving Driving While Brown, DWB, Driving While Black. And the war on marijuana is the tool they use. This is the tool they use to be able to enforce these things in a racist way. The California NAACP agrees. They have come out in support. Alice Huffman, the head of the California NAACP, quoted, coming out in support of California's Prop 19 because she knows how much racism is involved in this war on some people with drugs. That's why we continue to fight this. This is one of many reasons we continue to fight this, not just because of race, but it's because it's wrong for anyone to be locked up for using a plant or growing a plant that is non-toxic to themselves and so little harm to society. Thank y'all for listening to me rant a little bit. Been crazy here working without Ganja John. He's still in the hospital getting that eye taken out. He will be back as soon as he can. Been a little hectic for me trying to run it all at once, but I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow's show, we're going to speak with Dale Sky Claire from Prop 19. She's the chancellor of Oaksterdam University and also one of the spokespeople for the campaign. We'll get some more topics to her. And on Wednesday, Dr. Mitch will be here for our segment on cannabis science. You can ask your live chat questions of Dr. Mitch Erlewine right in our chat. We'll get them to Dr. Mitch and we'll answer them live for you. For everyone here at normal.org, including Cannabis Carrie and Ganja John, I'm Radical Russ. Glad to be back from vacation. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.